Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.
A very good evening to you. This is Point of View. My name is Pimelo Motena. Thank you so much for being with us. It's a Tuesday, folks. It's not a Monday. It feels like a Monday, but it's actually a Tuesday. So that means we're going to do books today, much later on. Really, really interesting book. And I think you may not necessarily know this person who's written this book, but the stories, I think, are so important, so familiar. And I think it's such a great reminder of how we got here as a nation. Just the many people and the number of people that gave so much of themselves, of their lives, those who sacrificed so much for this freedom. And I think these stories are important to retell and to go back to, because sometimes we forget how we got here and why it's so important for us to hold on so tight to this freedom. So we're going to have a conversation with an author of a book that tells a story, really just what looks like a story of many, many, many South Africans. And I think that's, as I said, you know, an ordinary South African telling their story of their time in apartheid South Africa up until today. And I think it's a very good book to reflect on. Lots coming up on the show. One of the things that has been happening today, we're going to be speaking to my colleague, Karinda Jokmahan, who today, you know, just sort of, I'll call it bumping into the vice president, let's call it that, because it wasn't a full-on presentation, it wasn't a full-on press release or a press conference, but he kind of answered some questions that were actually out commemorating the lives of fallen MK members in Soweto, and then he took the opportunity to respond to a few questions, one of which is a VAT question, but also that what seems to be a bullet in his vehicle, or was it a bullet? And so we'll get all those questions answered. But Karinda warned me earlier on, saying, not much there. I said, it's okay, just tell us what he told you. Of course, what we are told is that the police are going to be investigating. We also told the ANC will also do its own investigation. What do you make of that story, by the way? 086-000-0959. What do you make of that? You know, what do you think happened there? In fact, I've been hearing people throughout the couple of days, others say, no, you know, you would know it if a bullet hit you and whatever. What do you make of that? Love to hear from you. There was a portfolio committee on health and wellness that did a site visit today at Tembisa Hospital. We'll talk to them. What did they find there? That was after a fire that had broken there. And we'll talk about the state of the building and progress being made or none thereof. We'll also, again, be speaking to a really, really, really a tax expert. I'll tell you that. You know, sit tight, take your pens, take your papers, and have your questions ready, because we're going to be answering all your questions around VAT. If you're running a small business and you are, you know, quite nervous about the 1st of May, what should you be doing? How should you be invoicing? When do you change what? Especially because there's so much uncertainty. Now, we know that the DA went to court today, along with the EFF and others, and I'm told the ruling should be by next week, Tuesday. But in the meantime, we don't know where we stand with the issue of VAT. Apart from that, you've also been hearing the Minister of Finance saying, well, actually, as things stand, we cannot afford not to increase VAT. So there is that. And we need to know, going forward, what does that mean for you and me? You have practical questions you need to ask. This is the time to do that. We'll have an expert in studio. Help us navigate. What do you do now? Do you add the VAT in your invoice now? Say your client is only paying in 60 days or 90 days. Do you add it now in your invoice? Those are the questions you want to answer, you want to ask, and she will be able to do that. So you can either send those voice notes now with those questions, or you can call in when she comes in. She'll be in at about 20 past 8. So you can, as I said, send the questions in now, 086-000-0959. You can call in. We can also call you back, or you can send a voice note on 063-688-0959. But let's start here. As you know, Pope Francis unfortunately passed away over the weekend, and lots going on at the moment. And if you've been watching television screens, you are seeing already just how the Catholic community has gathered around, you know, all sorts of spaces where they are able to celebrate his life. You've been probably watching those visuals coming through. Tomorrow he'll be laying in state, and that will be until Saturday, where he'll be laid to rest on Saturday. And then the morning, the 9-day mourning period begins, and then all the bishops will be gathering for the conclave, where they will all be required to vote. It's a little bit like a voting system, where they will be voting and, of course, then announcing who was elected new pope through that that smoke that will be coming out of the Vatican. So it's going to be a process. It's going to be interesting to watch. I had a conversation earlier on with Father Patrick Rakeketsi, who gave me his take on how he felt about the pope.
Kaya Talk.
Kaya Talk.
How much more
on the street
information does anybody need?
On the air.
Really, thank you so much for making time for us. We're speaking to Father Patrick Rakeketsi, who is a Montana Church, Catholic Church, parish priest. And really, on a day like this, Father Rakeketsi, condolences to you and the entire Catholic community.
Good evening to your listeners, and thank you very much for the condolences. And we also extend condolences to all the Catholics around the world, especially around our own region here in Southern Africa, and many other people who loved Pope Francis.
He was loved, was he not? And I wonder, you know, when he took office, of course, there was a lot of jubilation about the fact that this is somebody, first of all, who came from the global south, unexpected by many. And so I'm not going to ask you who's going to be next, because even then it was unexpected. But this is someone who has, in a way, I suppose, surprised many by his love for everyone. And of course, there will be those who disagree. But that's sort of the sentiment, is it not?
That's exactly the sentiment. And being loved, but also himself, that capacity to extend himself to love from top to bottom, from left to right, from Europe and Africa, and the whole South, the whole North, and extending himself in such a way that he was felt by everybody, genuinely so, is outstanding, and that's the capacity that this man had. And we can only glorify God for having given us such a leader of that magnitude.
He obviously stepped into a very different shoes, and also a very different church at the time. And of course, there were the obvious things that he changed, you know, where he wants to stay, and the little frills that he wasn't willing to have. But fundamentally, did, for someone like yourself within the church, did it feel like there was a difference?
There was what we would call the appearance would have been different. Let's be clear. Pope Francis did not change any dogma, did not change any doctrine of the church. He did not depart from the 2000-year tradition of the church. What he did was to just to give an alternative approach to the things that would have been stood in different ways or stood by and also understood by his own predecessors. And so he changed the approach, he changed the orientation, he changed the attitude, and things which were frowned upon, he allowed them. And just take an example of when he goes to Lampedusa, down south of Italy, where every migrant is coming illegally, he goes to meet them, but then everybody frowns at him. He goes back to the Vatican, he opens the showers for those people to come and wash. So in other words, he allows them to come in and say, these are the people of God as well. That's a magnificent sign of leadership, and actually the parking away from the other approach, which would have been, let's maintain the law, let's lock him out. But he opened his heart. He wanted the world to open its heart towards this type of people.
You make a good point when you say, look, it's not like he changed the church. I mean, it's a 2,000-year-old establishment. But he tried to speak to a lot of the government leaders as well, and in trying to show them, you speak of migrants. There were other things as well. We hear of the fact that he was, for instance, speaking to the parish priest in Gaza every single night, trying to check up on them as we know what's happening there, and made some pronouncements that were very politically clear about his position on some of the issues. But there must have been frustration about the fact that the church, yes, may pronounce on things, but doesn't seem like anybody's listening.
You would have had the same as well concern that he's trying to get people to understand the world and the church, but also the message of God to us in different way. And if people are really resisting, which is always there, and he was frustrated more by the indifference of people when he sees that they were not really taking care of the poor. He wanted to bring the marginalized, the people who are forgotten, he wanted them to be brought to the mainstream, so that when decisions are made, when people talk of what changes the world needs, they also have the voice. I mean, he has just left the big document now of the Jubilee year, declaring 2025 as a Jubilee that we should celebrate. And in that, he takes all the issues, including even the debt of African countries or the countries in the South who are having debt that the North does not want to listen to. And he says, if we are talking about God of salvation, these are the things that we need to address. So he would have had some difficulties in making people understand, but he soldiered on. That was his character. He was soldiering on. And I just want to say as well that soldiering on, this tenacity that he had, remember, he's the son of the migrant. So he knows when he talk about marginalizing, being marginalized. And so these are his childhood experiences that he had. So he knew how to work against adversity. The second point, he lived all his life, basically from young age, with one life. And today the world talks about mental health, that people have to be helped with counseling, with therapies. That time, there were not these things. He needed just to be strong, and he lived all these years up to when he dies with one life. Today, you would have a person who would really be under a lot of stress because of this type of conditions. Pope Francis was tenacious. He soldiered on until the end.
Mm. You speak of, you know, obviously the work that he's done, a document that he's left behind for you as the church to really think deeply about. What then should be the person who's going to take his position? Do you think that person will take over from where he left off, or is there a bit of concern that may be someone with a completely different outlook on how to manage the church?
I don't envy anybody who has to be in the shoes of Pope Francis, and we will have to pray very hard that we find somebody who will really get us where the church has to be. We hope the Holy Spirit will always help. Now, there are going to be a horse trading. It's going to be a horse trading between these 135 cardinals who are going to come together under one roof for the next 2 weeks or 3 weeks, depending on how long the whole process will be. They don't know each other because they are coming from all sorts of corners of the world. Unlike before, when we had central figures in the days of Benedict XVI, as Cardinal Ratzinger, everybody knew about him. This day, people don't know who is Cardinal Brizley. They don't know who is Cardinal from Brazil or from Papua New Guinea. And for example, the big dioceses like Milan in Italy, which has the biggest number of Catholics in the world, has no cardinal in that one. The big dioceses like Venice has always provided popes. It has no cardinal in this time. And so these are going to be the big issues. Now, they have to now listen to each other and ask the basic question, how will the church now sail through at this point in time? And that will bring them together to reflect better. And they will now look for a balancing act between the extreme left and the extreme right. they will find something in the middle and find a proper candidate.
So traditionally, as you're saying, you know, you would have these cardinals that will meet from all corners of the world, and our very own South African Brizzly will be there as well, holding the fort. But technically, it could be anybody. It could be you, as long as you're baptized, right?
As long as you are a Christian, a Catholic, you can be. But we have more than 1,000 years of cardinals
tradition
among themselves.
Yes.
Many years ago, before, I don't know when even the bishop would have been a pope, but now they choose among themselves, and it is easier this way, because then they can, as I said, they listen to each other, and then they will find. Pope Francis has left one legacy as well that we need to point out. He has asked the church to move in what he calls a synodality, walking together, which is the concept of the Bible. It's the concept that is there in the Bible, but it has to be brought forward, because he says, in working together, when we are working together, then we are listening to each other better. And at the same time, then let us engage in a conversation that is spiritual conversation that will help us to not to be political, but to understand what the Spirit says to us.
What impression did he leave on you personally?
Personally, he has, by the way, I met him in 2019. I met him, and that smile, we were more than 400 people there, but he kept smiling to each and every one of us and making sure that we feel his warmth. I found him very warm. I found him very concerned with the church. I found him as well very simple, very simple. I looked at his shoes, for example. I looked at his shoes on that day.
Yes.
And behind me, there's a picture of him with me there. I looked at his shoes and I asked, because thanks to Father Simon O'Donnell, who was our own brother here from Johannesburg, who was his communications aide there. I said, Father, how old are these shoes? He brought them when he came for the conclave. When he was elected, he never changed his shoes, you know? So that is the simplicity that we had of Pope Francis. And in that sense, then, he really makes you feel home. And he really makes the papacy becomes a real fatherhood figure, and the father who is really concerned about his children.
I mean, I believe your voice matters. All of the community of the Catholic Church matters. In your view, the next phase of the church, what should be prioritized?
We need two things. One, continuity. Has to be there in one form or another, either in appearing in the way that he did, and in being also very firm in doctrine. We need that to continue, but we also need to listen to this world of today that is having many extremes. One, a big extreme of towards the right, towards people who want to have the world by themselves and for themselves, but also we have a big number of people who are so poor, living below the marginal wage and so on, who need really their voice to be heard. So that continuity has to be there. At the same time, we also need to reach out. The message of Christ, the message of God for his people need always to be adapted to the needs of the time. And now the one who is coming has to tell us really, or we need to raise up our voice, and he needs to help us reflect better. This world of social media, this world of high technology, this world of conquering, this world of consumerism, the world of uncertainty in political structures, how are we going to navigate as a church? How are we going to navigate not only as a church, as believers? Because Pope Francis reached out to Islam, he reached out to traditional religions, he reached out to the Far East. All these will need somebody who is going to say again, how can we navigate? And we will need somebody, again, who will be open to these conversations, that we can really all of us rise towards making sure that we have a better church and a better believers tomorrow.
Let's talk about what happens now. He then moves tomorrow, in my understanding, and he will be in state until the funeral. Am I correct?
Yes, from tomorrow at 9 o'clock, he's brought to the state, to be in state. And on Saturday at 10 o'clock, then they will start the Requiem Mass, the funeral Mass, in the square.
Mm-hmm. There's a period of mourning after that, and then what?
Then we are going to be under 9 days of a mourning period. Mm-hmm. And that mourning period is the mourning period that the church, every church will still be continuing to pray for his eternal rest and also unifying ourselves together. But the cardinals themselves, 135 of them, and so as we have already said, our own Cardinal Breslin from Johannesburg is among them. They will be now meeting. They will now be under one roof. They will start now to bring their profiles to listen to each other, to say who is who, where do you come from? Are you from Sudan? Are you from Quebec? Are you from Papua New Guinea? Are you from Antarctica? Where are you from? What do you stand for? All these things are going to be there. By the time then they declare when they will conclave. Conclave is that big conference meeting that they are going to now take an oath to elect the Pope in total secret. And we are waiting to see in the world of social media today, how are they going to work it out so that no leakage can happen. Mm. So they will be now meeting in those days. And it's going to be whatever days it's going to be in terms of choosing who is the best. I mean, who has a majority, and it is required that it becomes a two-thirds majority among them. So 135 of them should be able to come with a kind of a 66.3% of the vote that for one person.
Is the Catholic Church ready for an African Pope?
We are waiting to see if the church is really, and the church means at this point in time, means the cardinals, 135 of them, will they be ready? We have the Africans, are 29 of them inside that. And among these 29, are they ready to see an African Pope, to see this skin again? But it's not the first time. I mean, in the big days of the early centuries, we had about three popes from Africa, but that would have been the north part of Africa. Mm-hmm. But in the recent last 1,000 years, we haven't had any. And so this is a question mark. It was the same thing when Francis came in. We didn't expect anybody from the south, but they had. By the way, let me tell also your listeners, when Cardinal Bergoglio, who became Francis, was elected in 2013, he had been, in 2005, he had been number two to Cardinal Ratzinger, who was chosen then. Mm. And so it means when it happened 10 years later that he came in, it was just to record. We had one person we wanted that time, and they elected him. So it was not really something difficult for them to say, we want somebody from the south. This time, will there be one from Africa? Will there be one from Asia? We have to see. But it looks like the church is moving towards the south, and we are waiting to see between Asia and Africa what we can have there.
Mm. Father Patrick Raikekezi, thank you so much for making time for us this evening. Really appreciate it, and condolences one more time.
Thank you very much. Happy evening.
The happy evening to you too. Father Raikekezi is from Montana Catholic Church.
Voice note your point of view on WhatsApp.
063-688-0959.
Kaya.
959. On the street.
On the air. Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.